Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm delighted to be here and very honored that the Onassis Foundation brought me here. I come from the ends of the world, as the Greeks would say. India, in a sense, came into Greek consciousness through Alexander. That had both pros and cons. And my paper is divided into two parts. The first part is the historiography, the way in which history is constructed, and the way in which, at certain points in time, different perceptions, different attitudes, different constructions become important. So my first part deals with the search for Alexander, particularly by the British officials who came to India as a result of colonization and as a result of India becoming a British colony in the 17th century onwards. The second historiographical framework, which became very important in the study of India, was chronology. Alexander's conquest provided this chronology, but also in the process, material culture was discovered, material culture which was bilingual, such as coins, and I'll come to that in a moment, but also brought into focus India as the land of spices. India from where pepper came, cloth came, and a whole lot of other important trade items came. And in the 20th century, the major framework that emerged was that of the Roman Empire, and India becoming a province of the Roman Empire and providing much of the trade commodities that were required. But let that be. I think we need to move on. And I think that what this hides, and I think what is important for our purposes today, and where we should look at towards the future, is the diversity of the narrative, particularly Greek writing, the major ways in which Greek, the language and the script, and I would like to make this distinction between the language, Greek language and Greek script, intervened in the multilingual ambience or the multilingual conditions which were prevalent in India. So how did Greek language, Greek script, how was that invented? How did that negotiate the various languages of India? And the other point that I would like to make is about religion. When one looks at early Greek narratives, and the one text that I would like to focus on in my presentation today would be the Periplus Maris Erethrea, which I think is a unique text, but has not been worked at to its full extent. And I think when one looks at that, and that's important, what one doesn't get is any indications of Indian religion. And this is going to be my other focus as to where does religion intervene, or is that important? I start with a quote from the Periplus, this is a first century CE text, which talks about various parts of Western India, and I'll show you that where it is on a map in a moment. But the reason why I put in this quote was twofold. One is that it talks about Barigaza, which is on the west coast of India, but it also talks about several several inland centers, Aratrai in Punjab, Arkosia, Gandhar, so on and so forth. It refers to the memory of Alexander almost after 400 years, that's in the first century CE, and to coins which had Greek letters. So the distinction that it makes, and the distinction I would like to make in the talk, is Greek language, Greek script, material culture, which reflects an engagement with the Greeks. I'm sorry, I don't seem to be able to get that functioning. But Barigaza is marked with the arrow. I wanted pointer.
Ah, the pointer.
Oh, sorry. Bahri Ghazi on that map is marked with an arrow, and that was a major entry point. But Bahri Ghazi was important not so much just as an entry point for Greek vessels, but as also a major importer and exporter from the region. Thank you. The centers, so looking at it from the Indian point of view, certainly the Periplus looks at it from one point of view, looks at it from the outside, looks at it as a center for import and export. But looking at it from the Indian point of view, the West Coast is important both for trade in commodities, but as is, as I have said in my points number three, that means Somnath, Vallabhi, and are both also religious centers, but what is also important is Junagar, which is a political center. The reason why I brought in religious centers and political centers, I will show you in a moment, because I think the engagement that Greek language and the Greek use of the Greek script indicates is not just trade connections, but connections at the political level, also connections at religious level, and we'll talk more about that. These sites are just overlook the bay, and sites, these are Buddhist sites. The temple that you see on top is a Jain temple, that's a much later temple, but these are the cave sites of where Buddhist ascetics lived, and these sites overlook the ocean. I'd like to move a little faster. These are the major clusters that one sees on the west coast of India. Politically, the region was occupied by the Kshatrapas, but again, I would indicate the silver coins which carry the bust of the ruler and the legend in the Greek script, and on the reverse are is the legend in two scripts, which are both local, the Kharoshti and Brahmi. And these coins indicate an engagement of the West Coast much further with the northwestern parts of India. These are the coins as you can see them. The script was used, the language is not often correct, but the script continued to be used for a very long time. What is also interesting is that many of these centers, the political centers on the West Coast, have inscriptions, and these are inscriptions which indicate both local rulers, the Kshatrapas, which are often seen as foreigners, and the Kshatrapas who are also mentioned in the Periplus. So without confusing you with too much of chronology and political and details of political dynasties, the basic point I'm making is that we are working at several levels. The Periplus is quite unique because it talks about local fishermen, and there's a quote there up from section 44 of the Periplus, which talks about local fishermen in the king's service coming out with crews of longships. And at the bottom, and particularly these two slides that I put here are slides which show local boat building and navigation. And the reason why I put them there is to indicate the very vibrant local sailing networks, and that when one looks at this connection, the sort of intervention of the Greeks and the local sailing networks, what one gets is really a vibrant and fascinating story of interaction and trade. What the Periplus also talks about is a very graphic account of the coasts of India, and which talks about how it's hidden from view, it's very difficult to navigate, and that the vessels run aground if they don't watch sharp. So it's both a graphic detail of the Indian coastline, which one doesn't get in other texts, but what it also hides is this whole relationship with the Persian Gulf. And while the emphasis has been on the Red Sea, while the emphasis has been on the Roman Empire and Alexandria, I think what is missed out by looking at an earlier framework is the very dynamic relationship of Greek settlements in the Persian Gulf, the west coast of India, and settlements in the Northwest, which often trace their ancestry from Alexander or the remnants of Alexander's army. This is a map taken from the Periplus. You can see that the west coast of India, you can see the number of dots there. This is almost empty. There's hardly anything there. And this is the route that is often highlighted. But I would argue that it is here that we need to look. And this brings us to what is happening to Gujarat, as well as centers further inland, which was indicated in the first quotation. So moving on, how do I then view the Indo-Greeks in Indian history? They can be viewed in a variety of ways. In the bilingual inscriptions that we get as early as 3rd century BCE, which has Greek, Aramaic, but also Brahmi. Also, what was the religion? Were these sort of Greeks? Greeks? Where does one trace ethnicity? Are these locals adopting Greek language? Are these the people who came with Alexander? How does one view their ethnicity? And I think ethnicity is a difficult question to answer, and especially when one looks at the kind of inscriptions that we have, where Heliodorus, for example, coming from Northwest India, he sets up this pillar in central India, and this pillar is a dedication for a temple for the Hindu god. Similarly, when one sees the distribution of Indo-Greek coins were die struck. They were not made in molds. But in addition to the die struck Indo-Greek coins, there is a large corpus, a really vast majority of coins made in coin molds. And these have a very wide circulation in the north. Why should Greek symbols be at all adopted on coinage, which has to intervene in local transactions? And I think that's where the dynamism and the vibrancy of Greek contact with India needs to be addressed and to be judged. I'd like to show, the reason why I put this slide in is to show the enormous impact that it has had on the study of Indian history. Because most of these coins are bilingual, so they have Greek on one side, but unknown scripts, or scripts which were unknown in the 19th century, Kharoshthi and Brahmi. And it was really these bilingual coins which were used to decipher many of these scripts. And as you can imagine, 19th century, the fascination with Greek coins, with anything Greek, anything that had Greek writing on it, was enormous, and certainly brought a lot of this into focus. Now, going back to ethnicity, this is a 2nd century BCE stele of Sophitos from Kandahar in Afghanistan, where Sophitos, or the Sanskrit name would be Subhuti, refers to Kandahar as his fatherland in the last line, "I am back in my fatherland." What does he mean? He's obviously identifying himself with a resident of Kandahar. But he writes in Greek, this is an inscription in Greek, he talks about leaving his country, trying to make money, the whole involvement of the people Sophitos from Kandahar in trade with large parts of India, tying in with what I just said about Indo-Greek coins. And the point that I'm making with this inscription is that what one does see is Greek as one of the languages in several languages used in the northwestern parts of India or Pakistan or Afghanistan, if one uses present political terminology, and the way in which this intersected or negotiated many of these identities that we talked about yesterday. I'd like to end with this gold coin. And it's a coin which was found inside a Buddhist stoop. It's a coin of the Kushan ruler Kanishka I, but it has a Buddha image. This is the first, he's the only ruler who has Buddha images on his coins. Nobody else does that. But the script used is a Greek script. Bodo. So it's the Buddha written on that. That's a monogram which is often used to identify many of the Indo-Greek coins, and also which was used much later. I think that this is a kind of fitting final slide for the points that I've been trying to raise, questions of religion, script, language, and ethnicity. And I hope that this leads to further more interesting and more vibrant work between the Greek connection with India rather than just viewing it through the eyes of Alexander or the Roman Empire. Thank you very much.